I'm Saifedean Amous. Welcome to the Bitcoin Standard Podcast, bringing you seminars from Saifedean.com, my online learning and publishing platform, where you can be the first to read my work and take my online courses on Bitcoin and Austrian economics. Members can read the draft of my next book, The Fiat Standard, in full, and also receive chapters from my forthcoming textbook, Principles of Economics, as they are written. By joining Saifedean.com, you can also join our regular seminars, which you hear on this podcast. The Bitcoin Standard Podcast is brought to you thanks to our sponsors. NYDIG, built for Bitcoin. NYDIG is a full-service financial services firm dedicated to Bitcoin, applying institutional wisdom and ingenuity to offer the full suite of financial solutions needed for institutions to access Bitcoin. From custody, execution, financing, treasury solutions, integration partnerships, and more. NYDIG's team brings decades of experience in the financial industry and passion for sound money to building the Bitcoin standard. I have been working with NYDIG for more than 2 years, and I'm very impressed with the vision, focus, and dedication they have brought to the institutional adoption of Bitcoin. Find out more on NYDIG.com.
OKCoin. Whenever someone asks me how to invest in Bitcoin, my advice is to accumulate Bitcoins periodically for the long run, or what is called dollar cost averaging. When you buy every day, week, or month, you channel Bitcoin's volatility to your advantage. In the long run, this strategy will outperform every other Bitcoin investment strategy, probably, except for amazing luck, perhaps. The best place to do recurring purchases is OKCoin, because they have the lowest fees for recurring Bitcoin purchases you will find anywhere. If you're stacking sats for the long run, every sat matters, and the fees with each purchase will add up. That's why I recommend you buy at the lowest cost possible from OKCoin. OKCoin is also the Bitcoin exchange available in the most countries around the world, so it will hopefully be accessible for you wherever you are. Go to OKCoin.com to get started with your stacking.
CipherSafe. For backing up your Bitcoins, I recommend using the products of CipherSafe. The Cypher Wheel is a gorgeous and brilliant sturdy piece of low-time preference engineering from a fourth-generation machine shop in Maine. Bitcoin is bringing hard money back, and our friends at CipherSafe are giving Bitcoin the low-time preference machines it deserves from the golden age of design. CipherSafe have now also come up with a low-cost, reliable new product, the Cypher Grid, which is made of two fireproof, rust-proof, and waterproof stainless steel plates, which can be locked together with a padlock and a tamper-evident seal to ensure privacy. The Cypher Grid's two plates are enough for storing 24 words, and it comes with the center punch you need, all for $59. Coinbits. Coinbits is a great way to introduce your pre-coiner friends and family to Bitcoin. Get them set up in under a minute and help kickstart their journey by turning every day's spare change into Bitcoin. This Bitcoin-only app takes the uncertainty and fear out of Bitcoin saving by rounding up debit and credit card purchases to the nearest dollar, then using the difference to buy Bitcoin. Set it, forget it, and let the app automatically tax your high-time preference spending by saving the hardest money ever. Want to save in Bitcoin faster? Customers can multiply their roundups up to 10x or adjust their savings frequency for weekly or daily Bitcoin stacking. Coinbits is built on a sound, tried-and-true dollar-cost averaging strategy that turns Bitcoin's volatility in your favor. Once you've gotten a private wallet set up, Coinbits encourages you to withdraw your Bitcoin to your own private wallet and embrace the Bitcoin standard way of life. Start stacking on coinbitsapp.com and save your time and energy in the soundest money ever. Noddle. As discussed in the Bitcoin standard, Bitcoin is controlled by the nodes that operate its software. It is only through consensus between nodes that the Bitcoin blockchain continues to live, and it is only by running a Bitcoin node that you are part of this consensus and can verify the validity of the transactions you receive and the ownership of your coins. Whenever anyone asks me what are the most important warning signs that something is wrong with Bitcoin, I always answer the following. If the number of Bitcoin nodes is declining and or the cost of running nodes is rising significantly. I believe it is really important to run a node, but I don't recommend running it on your own work or personal computer, as it can compromise the performance of your computer and, more importantly, the security and privacy of your Bitcoin node. A far better solution is to buy a dedicated hardware node, and for that, I highly recommend Noddle. Manage all your Bitcoin activity, such as Lightning or BTC Pay server, and isolate them from your personal computer by putting them into one dedicated device that is always running and does one thing only, Bitcoin. Become a first-class citizen of Bitcoin by running your own Noddle node, available at noddle.it. Cold Card. My hardware wallet of choice is the Cold Card. I strongly recommend only conducting Bitcoin trades on computers that are dedicated to Bitcoin and cannot connect to the internet. I like the Cold Card because it is a contained machine optimized for Bitcoin and Bitcoin only. Cold Card is basically a small computer that can only do Bitcoin, which makes securing it more straightforward. Use the code BitcoinStandard on coldcardwallet.com to get a 5% discount. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Bitcoin Standard Podcast Seminar. Today's guest is Katie the Russian. Katie was a professional sailor, professional athlete, and now she is working as part of Plan B Passport, which aims to give people more freedom by offering them more passports and more options in their life through what is called Bitcoin flag theory, or what is also known as five flag theory. I think this is a topic that's very interesting for people who are into Bitcoin. In my mind, I think a big part of the reason that people are attached to their government, consciously or subconsciously, is the fact that their government controls their central bank. And so that just ends up making them have to be attached and allied to whatever their government does. And I think once you upgrade to Bitcoin, and now your central bank is no longer your national government. Your central bank is a bunch of software that you run on your computer. You suddenly start realizing that there's much more to life than just going along with whatever people are in charge of your government. And Katie helps people optimize their life for their freedom and for their own well-being. By taking advantage of laws that are favorable and doing regulatory arbitrage, jurisdictional arbitrage in order to make life easier. So I'm really excited about discussing those things with Katie, and I think we're going to find a lot of interesting and hopefully useful nuggets of information for our seminar attendees and listeners. So thank you for joining us, Katie.
Absolutely. Very happy to be here and hope to be helpful.
Thank you. So first off, let's begin by talking a little bit about your background and how you got into this business. It's not a very common career path for most people to go from professional sailor to international passport dealer. So how did you go down that route?
Passport dealer. I think I'm going to put it in my Twitter bio now. I really like it. Well, I like to believe that it was inevitable for me to end up, you know, armed with sound money, armed with flag theory and other tools of sovereignty just because of the way I grew up. So, like, I have endless stories from my childhood and teenage years and early adult life that set me up with, like, a lot of questions to the system that we have in place. Like, I was a pro athlete without a good health. Like, how is that possible? And then I was studying at like the best economics and finance school, majoring in economics and finance. And I could not understand what's going on with hyperinflation in my home country. And then I was a member of national team who constantly got denied in visas to go and compete around the world. So like all these things really set me up with like, okay, you better do your own research and figure things out because the system doesn't do well to you. So the way it happened is basically I dropped out of school after 2 years of studying there. I was still in national team and I figured out that I can actually get a green card in the United States just because I'm a pro athlete. So I went through immigration, my own immigration to the US. And as I was going through the process, I realized that like, hey, just because I have a driver license from another country really helps me out here right now. Or I could get a bank account without it being attached to social security number because I'm an immigrant. Or then my dad could use his Florida driver license in Russia to get out of like fines and fees. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of cool game where you just play different flags in different jurisdictions in order to maximize for your freedom. And I like at this point, I knew that there is a bigger game that I'm just playing it on a very tiny level. And probably people figured it out and, you know, scaled the whole thing. And that's how I ran into the flag theory. And the more I was learning about it, the more I was realizing that's what I want to do. And I was already starting to get into Bitcoin at this point. So it all aligned pretty well together.
Okay, so how did you then begin to do this personally and then professionally? So what was the path there?
I just started learning a lot. So I started a little over 3 years ago. And at the beginning, I was just helping another company that was selling Passport at the moment. And all I was helping them with is like, what is Bitcoin, how you accept it, and what is the wallet? Because in 2017, they got hit by a lot of Bitcoiners to get the passports, but they didn't know how to like how to even, you know, accept money in Bitcoin, accept payments. So it was a friend of mine. He was like, Katie, help me out. And I was helping him with that. And then later on, he was like, well, you should just start your own company and do that on your own. And so I did.
Nice. Okay, so tell us a little bit about Five Flag Theory. What is the idea there?
Yeah, so I just call it Flag Theory, and my definition of it is to limit your dependency on any one particular state while also collecting flags from jurisdictions that are beneficial for you in various ways, depending on what you're optimizing for. And as you mentioned, a lot of it is tied to your central bank, right? So at the beginning of the flag theory existence, it was 3 flag theory, and then it became 5 flag theory, and then 7 flag theory. But I tend to believe that actually with the existence of Bitcoin, we can go back to like 3 flag theory easily, just because Bitcoin takes care of so many things, like such as asset protection, like that's no longer in play. Your corporate structure is also not as important anymore, because again, you accept payments in Bitcoin and you're way more free there. So I think Bitcoin actually helps us out because it's a flag on its own. It's a cyber flag or something like that, and that's the most important one. And
so basically, just to slow things down for people who are not very familiar, the idea behind Five Flags is that you try and establish some connection with 5 different jurisdictions so that you can reduce the taxes that you pay, reduce the regulatory burden that you have. So the idea there is you have your birth country, which you were born in, and you have its passport. And then you have the place where you incorporate your business. So you look for the place where you have the best corporation laws for your business. And then you have the place where you reside, which is made for tax purposes, where you could have to pay the least amount of taxes. And then there was the place where you have your bank accounts, I think, and where you have your finances.
Yep.
And then a place where you hang out, where you like to play, where you travel in order to enjoy yourself and in order to make sure that you, you put your fun time in a place where it won't end up costing you a lot by forcing you to end up under the jurisdictional under the jurisdiction that would tax you more, right? That's kind of the idea behind Five Flags, right?
Yeah, and the tools of flag theory in this way would be like citizenship, residency, real estate, corporate structures, banking, driver licenses, even things like work authorization. So all those are toolkit of the flag theory.
Yeah. And so you're saying that basically Bitcoin simplifies this because it saves you a lot of headaches when it comes to incorporation and asset inflation. You don't have to worry about finding the right bank account and finding the jurisdiction that has right banks for you and where you can keep your money safe, because number go up, technology takes care of that.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to worry about taking your money around and crossing borders with money, because Bitcoin travels much easier than fiat, right?
Yep. And asset protection mechanism used to be about you protecting it from the government. But I always say now that the best asset protection mechanism is SHA-256 and the 12 or 24 words in your head. So, like, this is the ultimate asset protection tool.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, for you, basically, Bitcoin just strengthens this. So, what do you think Bitcoiners should be looking to do? You're the average Bitcoiner. You started, let's say, stacking sats a few years ago. And now the sats have accumulated, they've grown in value. And now, let's say, you're sitting on something like 5 or 10 or 20 years income in Satoshis. Many people just, are kind of surprised by this happening to them and don't really know much about what to do with them. So how can you optimize for something like that? You know, let's say if you're the average citizen of your average Western kleptocracy charging 40, 50% tax rates, how do you deal with that?
Yep. So right now, the current Bitcoiners optimizing for three things, I would say. It's lifestyle, it's taxes, and it's freedom of choice and autonomy over your body, right? So these three things are the most important. Depending on where you're coming from, it will always be custom tailored for you. So let's say you're coming from a country like Australia. So in this scenario, you probably want to get out of Australia. You want to move elsewhere. You want to make sure that you're no longer a tax resident of Australia. And you want to live in a cool place too. So in this scenario, you purchase a passport from a tax haven. So a country that has zero capital gains tax, zero global income tax, zero inheritance tax. Then you trying to figure out, do you actually want to live in this country or do you just keep your tax residency there and then making sure you don't trigger any tax residency elsewhere? And based on this, you choose in the countries that provide you with two other things. It's autonomy over your body and lifestyle, right? So you're looking in some Latin American countries probably, or you might actually want to live in one of those Caribbean tax havens because they do provide you with pretty cool lifestyle too. Now, if you're coming from the US, you will run into more issues because United States has citizenship-based taxation, meaning that no matter where you live, you will still have, like, you're under Uncle Sam's eyes no matter what. Only two countries in the world actually have this thing called citizenship-based taxation, United States and Eritrea, East African country. In this scenario, in order to completely optimize for taxes, you would basically need to renounce your U.S. citizenship, which is a huge step for many. So depending on where you're coming from and what you're optimizing for, the flag theory will always vary. You will have to strategize for what is the flag distribution you want to have in place.
Yeah. And I think at this point, yeah, it's, you know, 2 years ago, this would not have seemed like it was interesting for an interesting question for most people. But now it's probably at the top of the list for, I would say, a large number of Bitcoiners, if not a majority of Bitcoiners. The last point that you mentioned, bodily autonomy, which is insane. The fact that it's become it's become a huge problem to simply find a place where you are able to decide what medical treatments you and your family undergo. And it's absolutely shocking to witness what has happened in the world where it's no longer your choice. Politicians decide that this thing is what you need to do, what you need to take. And now more and more of your life is basically dependent upon this. I'm sure you're noticing a lot of Bitcoiners concerned about this, right?
Yeah. I had a huge spike of clients coming from Canada and Australia. They used to be interested in flag theory because of the taxes. Now they just need to get out of their country because they have no choice. And I have crazy stories where they will come to me and like they're seeking for asylum at this point because their country doesn't provide them with a choice anymore. So that's pretty crazy to see cases like that coming from countries like Canada and Australia.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. I mean, I think Australia and Canada are, and New Zealand, I mean, the sociopaths in charge of these countries are just absolutely amazing. You know, they've gotten, you listen to them talking on the media and it's like they're enjoying being the schoolmaster of the country and just telling people, you will do this and you will not do that. And if you don't do this, you cannot do that. And it's an absolute shock for people, you know, who had an idea that these places had some kind of rule of law. And of course, the most shocking thing about it is how a majority of the population seems to be going along with it, whether it's in Canada or Australia and New Zealand. I got an invitation recently from somebody telling me, we'd love to have you over in Australia to give a talk. And for me, I mean, for me, it's just amazing that they think of their country as being a place where you can invite foreigners. Like you could not possibly pay me enough to go visit Australia at this point. There aren't enough Bitcoin in the world to pay me to go to Australia. I mean, the things that you see on TV are just absolutely astonishing. You know, people getting thrown in jail for not wearing masks, and people getting jackboots on their head for wearing their mask incorrectly in the street, and protesters just having their lives destroyed because they've dared to protest about that. It's absolutely amazing. And it's very much a surprise. I wonder, it's kind of sad when you see when you see that some of the people that oppose it are deciding to leave, because that means that the percentage of people that are in opposition to this kind of insanity is declining in these countries. And so it's going to spread more and more into to go more and more into wild authoritarianism. You know, you look at this Jacinda, whatever her name is, the way she talks to her people, like a schoolmistress, bossing them around. That crazy sociopath in Victoria, Daniel Andrews, and then Canada's sociopath. They have absolutely loved being in charge, and it's clear for them. You know, this has nothing to do with health. They're just enjoying the power. They're just enjoying the ego trip. It's very, very, very scary. I know a lot of Australians and Canadians and new Kiwis who have left their countries. And it's sad. What are some of the destinations where people are going in search of bodily autonomy?
Interestingly enough, United States is still a pretty good place to be if you could enter it on time, basically. And I believe the entrance vaccine mandate will not hold for long. So in the United States, there are freedom-minded states, and I've been between the two of them. Basically, I've been going back and forth between Florida and Texas, and that's where I'm currently at. A lot of people go into Latin American countries, and that's pretty interesting to see how they just don't enforce anything, or either they just not playing the game with other jurisdictions. So a lot of it is just you're trying to, like, the blue check culture, right? Like Canada and Australia trying to be like, hey, we're part of this group that really cares about your health, which is absolutely not true. And then we look at countries like Mexico, who is just, you know, across the street from Canada, and they just don't play it, don't play this game. They let people do whatever they want, probably because they don't have the same opportunities to just crush their economy for so long. Like, people just would not withstand that. And they tried to do some lockdowns at the very beginning, but like, people don't live from paycheck to paycheck there. They live from today morning to tomorrow morning. Like, every day salary is what they need in order to survive tomorrow and have bread on the table tomorrow. So they just go to work no matter what. Even if they thought it was risky, they kind of had to. But then at some point they realized, like, hey, I've been open this whole time through the whole lockdown. I'm in a pretty good health, so I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. And that's why Mexico is still pretty free. Other jurisdictions that I've heard of, Uruguay, South Brazil, been pretty good with that. East European countries, some of them are holding well, some of them are not. I also just tend to believe it's all on people, right? There's no law that is automatically enforced. It's all the laws are the ones that we let them enforce on us, the ones that we agree with. And the more people stand up against that, the less the chance that they can actually enforce it.
Yeah, I think I've said this before in our seminar discussions that, you look at how places like Australia and Canada have just completely gone insane, where people have just normalized the idea that, yeah, well, you know, the government is just going to starve you if you don't take the vaccine, and that's your fault for not taking the vaccine. And of course, it's the kind of morons who think like this are always the kind of morons who would have never taken the time to actually study what is the vaccine and what are the risks involved. Because, you know, in reality, the companies that make this, first of all, they have no liability, so they have no interest in making sure that their product is safe. And then they are making enormous profits from it. So they have a lot of incentive to get it into the bodies of as many people as possible. And then on the other hand, And of course, these morons also watch a lot of TV, and so they don't even think about what is the risk. You know, if you're under 60, if you're under 50, if you're healthy, catching COVID for you is a couple of days cold. And of course, your TV never tells you this, but there are ways of being healthy. You know, being unhealthy is not something that just gets, it's not a sentence from the sky where, you know, God decided that you're just going to live your life unhealthy. It's a choice that you take every day with every pack of Doritos that you eat and every TV show you watch on a couch instead of going out and moving your ass and getting some exercise. So, of course, you know, one of my favorite iconic moments of Corona hysteria was Doug Ford, the premier of Ontario, who is a morbidly obese man. And I think he was a drug dealer at a certain point of his life, or I think it was his brother who was a drug dealer. I don't really follow Canadian politics, but I know that he's definitely the picture of bad health. And Ontario had some of the strictest lockdowns in the world for a very long time. They destroyed so many small businesses. They shut down the gyms. Basically, most of the gyms in Ontario have been destroyed, and they can't make their rent anymore, and they've had to shut down. And this is almost like, you know, rubbing salt in the wounds, where he goes on TV and he teaches people how to make his mom's recipe for cheesecake. And he has a whole video which he posts, which is him with his gigantic belly, enormous belly. He's extremely obese. And he's sitting there and teaching people how to make this massive cheesecake with whole buckets of sugar being poured in. And he's telling people how to eat that cheesecake, which is going to make them fat. And of course, you know, the biggest risk for COVID is obesity. You know, being old, being over 80, being over 70 is a massive cofactor for risk, and being obese. And so, you know, you shut down the gyms and you make people make cheesecake at home, and then you suddenly have a much more, well, not suddenly, obviously, it's been many years of feeding shit to people, but, you know, your population is more and more vulnerable, which necessitates more and more lockdowns and more power in the hands of criminal sociopaths like Doug Ford. And so, obviously, these governments are not interested in health, clearly. You know, if they were interested in health, they'd be telling people to eat properly, and they'd be telling people to get out and get exercise and sunshine. I mean, the three best things that you can do is get sun, eat properly, and exercise. And everything has been designed around preventing you from doing those three things, and instead forcing you toward taking patented pharmaceutical products, which are highly profitable for the sponsors of your local kleptocracy. People really don't think about this. You know, people in Canada and in Australia, they've had it so good for so long, they can't even imagine the idea that somebody like Doug Ford and Justin Trudeau and all of these people could really be getting off on all this extra power that is being given to them, enjoying the fact that they can just basically shut down the country and then make all economic decisions in the country become theirs. You know, suddenly they have complete and total power. And people in Australia and Canada, you know, they're generally nice people, happy-go-lucky, polite people. So they don't really think that there could be a cynic who's actually shutting down my business because he is enjoying the extra power that it gives him. And then because then he can, you know, he'll have more power, and this will allow him to become more and more powerful and win more elections. They don't think of it that way. But people in places like Eastern Europe, I think, are highly likely to see the cynical part of it. They've had an experience with despotic, totalitarian, socialist sociopaths, like in Eastern Europe. And they're highly suspicious of this stuff. So I think I would expect that, you know, in places like Eastern Europe, you'd get better enforcement of that stuff, or less enforcement of that stuff, because even if they pass the laws that come down from above, you know, the international laws that are being imposed on everybody, and all these idiotic rituals of wearing diapers on your face and taking Pfizer every 2 weeks up your veins, even if they enforce all of those things, people are just not going to play along with it. Do you find that to be true?
Yeah, definitely. I actually was able to go back to Russia in August this year, And I could see it with my own eyes. I knew that would be the case. And I was really happy to witness it too. I do believe that we have like immunity against government bullshit and government overreach, just because, you know, over the last 100 years, we had monarchy. Now we had communism. Then we had democracy with the same president for 20 years. Like on default, we don't trust government. Therefore, we don't outsource our decision-making, like daily decision-making to them, right? So I don't believe them when they tell me what to eat. I don't believe them when they tell me what medicine to take. So we tend to make our own choices no matter what government tells us, like disregarding basically their opinion. And that's been success so far. It's especially in those, like basically anywhere outside of Moscow, nothing's going on. There's no vaccine mandates. There's no lockdowns. People are pretty free. Moscow, I believe they did take much more from like Western culture and all that woke kind of culture. So there you actually need a QR code to go to restaurants. But at the same time, I believe there's something like 75% of QR codes in the supply that are fake right now. So that's kind of interesting too. And government's realizing it. They realize that like it cost about $200 to $400 to get the QR code in Moscow. And it's like so decentralized in terms of who can make it happen for you. So they just can't shut it down.
Yeah, I think, yeah, this is kind of the encouraging thing about being in places like Eastern Europe in this regard, that it's people just have this culture. And I remember a friend of mine from an Eastern European country mentioned that there was a pretty high profile case of a pretty well-to-do doctor in Warsaw, in Poland, who got caught fabricating some of these cattle tags where and basically the whole thing got covered up very quickly, and apparently the reason is that the people involved and the people who were getting the cattle tags from him happened to, or I guess, you know, the reason they speculate that this is why it's happened is because a lot of powerful and influential people in the country were doing this. So I think there's a big culture of just, you know, all right, we have to do this because, you know, we want to be part of the EU and we want to be part of the international community and we want to be playing along with all of the stupid bullshit of the World Economic Forum and all these sociopaths. But, you know, if you find a way around it, everybody's going to hush it up and nobody's going to care.
You know what also I found interesting, that in a lot of East European countries, they actually do recognize herd immunity that you get after the COVID. So basically, instead of proving that you have a vaccine, you can prove that you had COVID in less than 12 months and you basically have the same rights, right? So this is not the case in here in the US or Canada or anywhere else. But in my home country, in Turkey, I know it is the case, Cyprus. So that's interesting.
Yeah, and this is another example of why this is obviously and clearly not about health. If it was about health, you know, it's very clear that there's so many studies that show that natural immunity is far superior to vaccine immunity. And yet governments just continue to refuse it because it's very clear this isn't about health. This is about obedience. This is about compliance. And the interesting thing is to look at where the places are where the governments aren't so concerned about your obedience. I think that's really where the opportunity is. So within Eastern Europe, obviously Eastern Europe is a big place with a lot of countries and a lot of jurisdictions. What do you see in terms of the variety there?
Well, I wasn't able to do much research myself. I'm pregnant. So if it wasn't the case, thank you. If it wasn't the case, I would probably be traveling the world right now, trying to find a freedom place. But I'm a little more settled now. Russia and Ukraine, definitely good places. A lot of countries that are trying to join EU are not free. They're like trying to play the game even harder than other West European countries. So those are not the ones that I would look into at all. Those two. Moldova. I know Moldova been holding on actually pretty well. Nothing going on there. But yeah, that's about as far as I can tell you.
Yeah, good to know. Okay, well, and speaking of this whole insane hysteria around the coronavirus, in your paper, you've written a paper which we're going to post in the show notes about the about the idea for Bitcoin flag theory, and you mentioned the sovereign individual, and it's been a topic that's been coming up for a couple of weeks here, where I'm beginning to think, In the Bitcoin Standard, I spent a few pages going over the sovereign individual and outlining its thesis. And I think, you know, it was pretty shocking because the book was written in the 90s. And in that book, they say, you know, there's going to be a digital cash that governments can't control, and it's going to take money out of the hands of government. And, you know, the main thesis of the book in general was that the microchip is going to obsolete the nation state. And I think this is obviously very appealing for somebody like me, who's a who's an anarchist, who does not believe in the legitimacy of nation states and governments to be going around and taxing and imposing their laws over people. And I think perhaps I'm beginning to rethink it. Maybe this is the one part of the Bitcoin standard that I would reconsider, in that. I think the main thesis, as far as it comes to Bitcoin, is correct, in that Bitcoin can take away the printing press from governments and then force a lot of economic discipline on governments. But the rest of the thesis, the idea that computing and the internet is going to dismantle the nation state, I think that's a I think the events of the last year have been a massive slap in the face for that. I mean, we thought that technology is going to mean that, you know, well, you have your computer and you can route around government information. Old media is dead. Now the new media is Twitter and CNN, CNN and all of these made for morons TV channels are all dead. And now the new media is Twitter, and they can't control Twitter because you curate your own feed and you decide what you want to listen to and who you want to talk to. And I think one by one, we saw all of these tenets of these thesis basically get destroyed over the last year or so, except for Bitcoin, which has continued to thrive, but has still, to be fair, has still not gotten anywhere near large enough to threaten the printing press of the governments. So I'm curious about what you think about that. Is the thesis of the sovereign individual, do you think, being refuted because of the corona hysteria bullshit, or what?
It kind of shows us that we might have been a little overly optimistic on that part. And the reason behind it, not because there is not enough technology to empower individual, or we just didn't build it yet, but because people don't care. Like, the technology is in place, Bitcoin exists, but people just don't care enough to take the sovereign approach. They just actually like outsourcing decision making to the government. They like being reliant on somebody else, because that's the easy approach. That's the lazy approach. You don't have to think if you have somebody else to rely on. And that's probably the problem. So maybe in order for the majority of people to understand why it's valuable, we actually need to hit the bottom. So you mentioned how in Australia, people who are freedom-minded live in the country and obedient people are staying. So the ratio is just getting worse and worse. So I tend to believe that it's just going to accelerate them hitting the bottom sooner rather than later. And when you hit the bottom, such as what happened in, you know, Soviet Union, when you realize that, okay, communism didn't work and we're fucked now. So maybe Australia will hit that bottom sooner and they will jump off of it. And maybe that's what's necessary. Unfortunately, I don't want to believe that, because I'm surrounded by people who already realized that and did take their sovereign approach and were thriving through this whole bullshit. But for other people to get there.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, the tricky part about this is that it took 74 years for the communist experiment in Russia to truly fail. You know, once the Bolsheviks took over power, I mean, you know, Mises explained why socialism is doomed in 1921. And he was absolutely correct. But the Bolsheviks and socialists in other places managed to adapt enough to the market economy to keep the wheels rolling on their stupid experiment, and it survived up until the 1990s. And so the tricky part here is that Australia could continue in this kind of hellish communist existence for many, many more years. And of course, you know, that doesn't mean that things are going to be nice. It's just things are going to get worse. But of course, the people that are going to suffer are not going to be Daniel Andrews and the rest of those sociopaths in power. It's going to be everybody else. And that's what makes it sustainable in a sense, because the people that are in power, you know, they are going to continue to have more money and more resources and more power because they control everything. And they decide which businesses are allowed to open, which businesses can't. And the rest of society is the one that suffers. So the rest of society becomes weaker. And I'm sure you know this from Russian history. You know, the society gets weaker, the government gets stronger. And then that just strengthens the government further and allows it to survive even longer. So it's, I think, hitting rock bottom is a very, very long detour toward achieving, you know, freedom in our lifetime. And it's pretty depressing to think about the implications of this. But I think the depressing part of it is that it's we're seeing how all of these trappings of technology that we thought were going to be helping the individuals get stronger and freer, they're actually just they're ending up allowing the opposite. And we're seeing everywhere in the world, and now this is clear. You know, you have to be a complete moron to think that this is that the vaccine passports is about health. I mean, it's very clear the point is to install a system where everything in your life is logged into an app, and then that app is controlled centrally. And so we're going to have something very similar to the social credit score that is in China, implemented across the world. And along with that, there's going to come, you know, central bank digital currencies. And that's just complete totalitarianism. I mean, we're going to have a central bank that is able to decide what you can spend your money on, where you can go, how you can move. I mean, the possibilities are endless. I don't understand how we could have missed this a couple of years ago. We were just thinking about, you know, oh, well, now you get your information from Twitter and you log on to your phone and you buy goods from all over the world and you travel wherever you want. Well, no, now the government logs on to your computer, your phone, and they just deactivate your phone and all of your money whenever you misbehave, whenever you say something that's nasty, whenever you step out of of the radius that is allowed to you. I mean, it's just think about the next step, which I think we're very close to seeing this, which is, you know, your money is on your phone. And now, of course, the UBI aspect of this really strengthens this. Now that you're getting your money from the government, all of your money is on your phone. It's all central bank digital currency. It's controlled by your government, and it's deactivated if you get more than 15 minutes away from your house. You know, you're allowed to be within, let's say, 500 meters of your house, so you can go to your local grocery store to buy. You know, you can go to your nearest grocery store, and your money only works in your nearest grocery store. That's it. The microchip is proving to be an incredible ally of totalitarianism. We're going to witness the entire Western world basically turn into a communist regime, with governments getting more power than the Soviet Union ever had over its citizens, while, of course, the majority of citizens are just being complete fucking morons and cheering it along because they think it's about health. And, you know, when it comes to information as well, we're seeing the same thing. So, yeah, we watch. It's not just CNN that got a massive boost in its ratings over the last year when we thought that it was dying. But also, you know, we thought Twitter and Facebook and social media is going to mean freedom of information. But remember last year how Twitter was censoring things. Remember, you know, people were posting links to certain studies from PubMed and your account would just be shadow banned for a week. Everything that you post would not show up in anyone's account. People were getting suspended left, right, and center for saying things that were challenging it. So, even the most decentralized solutions for social media have been massively compromised. I could continue to rant for very long, but what does that tell you about this?
If it bleeds, it can die. And Bitcoin is the only thing that was able to withstand anything they tried to do with that. So up until the moment we can build things that don't bleed, no matter what you do, like a honey badger, basically, we'll just keep seeing them fail, I guess. And it's not only when it comes to health, you shouldn't trust government. Basically, they never have your interest at heart. So no matter what they tell you, it's probably not for your own sake. And like, just stop trusting and, you know, do your own decision based on your own research. Calculate where you currently stand. Calculate your attack vectors, your actors that can attack you. Build your strategy in order to withstand those attacks and execute it. Like that comes to everything. It's not the first time they're attacking our health with this vaccine. Everything that's going on in a like government-led medical care is absolutely terrible. I've tried, like, I was a professional athlete and I had access to best doctors every 6 months, great checkups. And I ended up being unhealthy because I trusted them. And up until the moment when I was like, okay, I'm going to figure my own health now, that's when I got better. And that's what we just have to do in every aspect of our life.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think the and then this is a recurring theme in this podcast. We're always looking at fiat world as and it's amazing once you apply this analytical lens of fiat versus natural order, where fiat is a world in which reality is imposed from above with the printing press. And so fiat food is what your government tells you should eat because its sponsors tell it to say that. Fiat health, fiat medicine, all kinds of things are just imposed from above, and they are fiat, and they're massively destructive for you. And if you think about how the world actually works, if you try and think with your own mind, you come up with very different conclusions. You become a pariah to your friends and family. They all think you're crazy, but you know, it's a very common experience that, you know, you're getting told by your very unhealthy, very fat, and very brainwashed and very miserable friends that, you know, you're just crazy, even though you're thriving and you're happy and you're prospering. I tweeted this the other day that basically almost everybody I know in real life, you know, everybody outside of Bitcoin circles, everybody I know in real life, their life is getting destroyed either by fiat money or fiat food. And the one thing that keeps them going is that they can laugh at me for being this strange weirdo who's into this strange thing called Bitcoin and into eating meat and not believing what the government is saying to them. It's amazing. You know, these zombies are just listening to what's going on their TV. It's destroying their lives. They think that their lives getting destroyed is just the normal order of things. You know, you were born to be fat and miserable and depressed and taking tons of medications and poor and broke and losing your job because of COVID and losing your life savings because of inflation. That's just the natural order of things. But then at least, you know, at the end of the day, you can tune into CNN and get told what to think and then laugh at idiots who are healthy and happy and thriving. It's a very, very common experience. I think it's amazing that, you know, Bitcoiners are becoming, you know, online. You see, Bitcoiners just have to stick with each other one more and more because everybody we know in real life is going down that rabbit hole, going down that fiat, hyper fiatization of their life, unfortunately.
Well, I'm lucky that I don't really see this part of the world anymore at this point. Like my household, the adjective fiat is like the worst adjective you can use for things. So like we all
mine the same
page with my parents-in-law, with my parents. So we're cool. We're on the same page. All my friends are Bitcoiners, and like, I barely see this weird life that's going on outside of it. And sometimes I will go into different communities, like immigrant communities in Florida, or just try to connect with somebody else on Instagram or Twitter or something like that from my previous life. And it's like, wow, that's weird. I recently started using this mobile app for pregnant women to find other pregnant women in the area to just connect and like talk about things. And I go through their accounts and you can put like 4 or 5 sentences about yourself. And 90% of them use one of the sentences as I'm fully vaccinated or like from fully vaccinated household. And it's like, come on, out of all the interesting things that you could write about yourself, 1 out of 5 is going to be about your vaccination status. Like, how fucked up is that?
It's the new Louis Vuitton now. You know, it's Pfizer is the new Louis Vuitton.
Yep.
It's depressing. It is depressing. But, you know, yeah. And the beacon in all of this is Bitcoin. It's what allows us to continue to at least find each other online. It's amazing. And it's truly astounding that a lot of no coiners and a lot of shit coiners like to laugh at Bitcoiners being weird. You know, why are Bitcoiners into eating these weird diets and into believing these weird things and not trusting government? And they're just basically truly illustrating the point. You know, why is it that people from all over the world, you know, just look at this seminar here. We've got 22 people here, and I can see people from basically the entire planet. You know, every continent is represented here. And people just get it, you know, once you snap out of the matrix of what your government is telling you. And of course, all the governments are saying the same thing. So all the intelligent people who think for themselves end up gravitating toward Bitcoin and end up gravitating toward rejecting the stupid propaganda of what the government is saying. But this brings us back to flag theory. One kind of objection or perhaps maybe the ineffectiveness of this is what has been truly astounding over the last couple of years is the fact that it's truly amazing to find, you know, places as far apart as Canada and Chile and South Africa and Russia and the Emirates and Holland and New Zealand, you know, from all over the world and Egypt and Morocco, everywhere, every continent, all these governments all over the world, you know, if you talk to friends in different countries, you know, the new, Daniel is saying hello from Socialist France in the chat. Yeah, and from France as well and from all these other communist hellholes. From all over the world, it doesn't matter what your government is. It doesn't matter if what you have in power, if the Muppets call themselves right wing or call themselves left wing. It doesn't matter if you're a democracy or if you're a military dictatorship or if you're a monarchy. Somehow, you know, this week, all of the governments have decided that the answer is that everybody needs to wear a diaper on their face. And then all over the world, they start mandating diapers on the face. And then somehow they all decide on the same week that everybody needs to start social distancing. Everybody starts social distancing. They decide that everybody needs to stay home. It's absolutely astonishing how in sync this has been all across the world. Now, granted, there have been a few exceptions. Belarus is one of my favorites, and we've discussed it extensively. Sweden has bucked the trend. Nicaragua, to some extent, Turkmenistan here and there, a bunch of other examples here and there have done sane things and bucked the trend and just, you know, told their people that, no, you don't have to do crazy things. And yet, on the one hand, you can look at it, all right, there's always going to be an exception, there's always going to be a beacon, and then you can just pack your bags and go to Belarus or Sweden or Nicaragua or one of these places. But on the other hand, you know, if they could get 195 out of 200 countries to do the same thing just quickly like that, you know, I think globalization is playing out in a very ugly way in that once these things come along, you know, these health bureaucracies that are being implemented that are being in charge, basically, you know, the World Health Organization and their buddies, they're becoming like a world government. They're a supranational government. And sure, you know, the Swedish and Belarusian governments might withstand a little bit of pressure, but I mean, can you count on them to continue to stand up to this 5 years from now, 3 years from now? That's the really scary thing. I think the way in which all of these things have been synchronized all across the world, the way there has been no attempt by any country to buck the trend other than those very small exceptions, the way that there has not been any kind of variety, you know, the astonishing way in which not a single health ministry said, how about you lay off the cheesecake for a couple of months because of the virus? You know, not a single country tried to come up with something creative. Everybody came up with the same idiotic bullshit that everybody else was trying. You know, diapers on your face and stay away from everybody else and shut down small businesses and take whatever Pfizer wants you to take. The way that they all did this in the same way, doesn't it kind of make flag theory a little bit moot? You know, you're running away from, you're trying to do jurisdictional arbitrage, but the arbitrage opportunities are basically disappearing. Everywhere is going to become the same. I think that there's a gray reality where, you know, up until 2019, I've traveled a lot all over the world, and I've always looked forward to traveling, and I've always looked forward, you know, there's so many places that I wanted to visit. And so many, you know, when I think of different countries, you know, I think of all the different aspects that are unique to its culture that I'd like to experience, you know, the individual aspects of it. And then after 2020, everywhere is just the same drab shithole. You know, I have no intention of going to Australia or New Zealand anymore. I have no intention of going to Holland again. Well, I've only been for a day once, but, you know, I've always wanted to go visit Holland. But, you know, what the hell would I go do in Holland now? You know, just go and get locked up. You know, on top of the kind of the homogenization that comes from the fact that everywhere has a McDonald's in it and everywhere is becoming similar. Now, everywhere has the same stupid, shitty government that is imposing the same kind of regulations. So in a few years, maybe everywhere is going to just have the same tax rate, the same stupid corona bullshit rules, and the same health passports, and basically the same lifestyle. Everyone is going to be plugged into their virtual reality set and experiencing life through the metaverse, and doesn't matter, you know, what nature you have.
So just last week, I was at a panel discussion at a conference, and it was me and Untapped Growth. And they were trying to basically ask us questions like, hey, when do you run and when do you stay and bunker in and make sure that you have a strong local community? So Untapped Growth, who is building homesteads, you know, raising his own cows and all that stuff, versus me with a flag theory. So I had to explain that by no means I'm pro living your country, no matter like at any point that shit hits the fan. Definitely not. Again, in the flag theory, we always try to optimize for different things by stacking different flags, right? So you always try to look into incentives behind this country staying the same way and keeping promises in place. So, for example, we're looking for tax havens. I do believe those Caribbean tax havens will stay the same way just because follow the money, follow the incentives. That's their revenue stream, right? They have to stay tax haven in order to attract more people to buy passports because otherwise they're fucked and they can't afford that. So I believe those will stay the same way. Then we're looking into different, you know, banking system. Who are the most reliable banking? Again, follow the money, follow the incentives. But then when it comes to lifestyle and your own personal freedoms, in this scenario, you don't really need an additional flag. You just need to make sure that you utilize other sovereignty tools, such as, you know, you have a freezer full of meat, you know how to hunt, you know how to fish. You have your own garden, perhaps. You unschool your kids, you're in a good health that you don't need to go ask doctors to give you something. And in this scenario, you might achieve more freedom just by preparing in the spot with your local community. And like tribe, like having your tribe is, I would say, another flag, like going to places where you know people and those people have the same state of mind as you do. They're into sovereignty. They're into the same, you know, the same ideas is also pretty valuable. So that's why we all, you know, talking about the citadel kind of structures, but maybe not in the way that, like, we're all talking about different kinds of citadel. And one of them is, for me, is just having a tribe of the same ideas.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think, yeah, that's definitely the case. And untapped growth is takes the kind of opposite approach to this, which is, you know, hunker down and go back to basics. And I think, again, Bitcoin allows you this kind of freedom to also to just stay where you are and be immune from the local bullshit that is around you and from your local government bullshit. Because really, once you take the Bitcoin pill, once you take the orange pill, it's only a matter of time before you discover the beef pill as well. And you realize that the only thing that you need to survive is beef. The only thing that humans need is clean water and beef. I don't need anything else. Yeah, clothes are nice, but you can do without them. You just need something that keeps you warm in the winter. And you definitely don't need to be shopping for clothes all the time. And I think historically, money pre-Bitcoin, you know, pre-Bitcoin money was a massive headache for people because it's hard to get it. And when you get it, it loses its value. And you need to constantly be involved in a market economy and constantly serving others in a million different ways and involved in a variety of different economic activities. And you have to be close to a city. But the internet and Bitcoin really make this much easier. So now you don't really need to be constantly involved in a market economy. And if you snap out of your government's propaganda on food that tells you that, you know, you need to be grazing all day and taking, you know, a new meal every 2 minutes, every 2 hours, and 6 to 11 rations of grain every day, like a cow. If you snap out of that, you realize, you know, you can just do with one big meal of beef or red meat once a day, then yeah, you can be pretty immune to all of the bullshit. You know, you and your family just need a farm the way, or access to a farm, and you can school your kids and you can work online and you can save your money in Bitcoin, and that's the best way to save. So that offers you a pretty big margin of protection from this kind of bullshit, I think. So I can definitely see the strategy of untapped growth. And we've had untapped growth on this podcast before. We've discussed this with him. I think, you know, the idea of buckling down, finding a few families, finding a few farmers, working on regenerating the soil, because the soil has been destroyed by fiat farming for decades, is also a viable strategy. Because this kind of new totalitarianism, it's not exactly like the Soviet totalitarianism where they're knocking on everyone's door and taking everything that you own. You, or at least so far, when it appears, you still get to keep your toys. They're just controlling your activity and your movement and your national money. So if you snap out of that, if you're not dependent on it, if you don't need their schools, if you don't need their most of their institutions, you might be able to do well and survive for yourself. And of course, you could combine the two, where I think this is likely to be headed, which is Bitcoiners are going to rally around each other and go to jurisdictions that are favorable and basically build these kind of citadels where you know, we'll have access to our own food, our own cows, and we'll be living next to each other so that our kids can socialize with one another and have something like a normal childhood of what children around the world could have expected to have before 2020.
Yep, interestingly enough, our lives barely changed through the last 2 years, right? Like, comparatively speaking, of course, compared to other people who lost their jobs, who really cannot make it happen for their kids to, you know, meet other kids. They don't understand how to unschool. Like, we were all prepared for that. We knew we couldn't trust government before Corona. And I had 80, probably by now 90 flights since the beginning of Corona. I had to take 2 PCR tests overall throughout the whole time, through 90 flights. My work hasn't changed. I'm hanging out with my friends. That didn't change. I'm eating great quality food because it's locally produced. There's no supply chain shortages because it's from the farm next door. So like, my life is totally fine because I was prepared to all that. So the more sovereignty tools you implement in your life now, the less attack vectors that will actually, you know, change your life. So that's pretty cool to experience, because I wouldn't say that I'm like totally prepared. I'm not where I want to be, but even that was enough for me to still thrive through the weirdest year of most people's lives.
Yeah, it's I can't really say the same. It's it has been. I mean, relatively, of course, if you're working online and if you have Bitcoin, then you're spared the majority of the devastation, so you can't really complain. But I can't, there's still, unfortunately, far too many people in my life that are into this fiat world, and so life has been a little bit complicated in this regard. In terms of lifestyle, so you said basically Bitcoiners are optimizing for bodily freedom, taxes, and lifestyle. In terms of lifestyle, what do you see as trends among the Bitcoiners that are getting in touch? Where are the Bitcoiners going? Just so we know, you know, where to plan if anybody's listening. Surfing, huh?
No, but honestly, Bitcoiners optimize for other Bitcoiners around at this point. Right now, I'm calling you from Austin, Texas, and people keep coming here because of other Bitcoiners. And this is a lifestyle they want. They don't want to be surrounded by fiat folks. They want to be surrounded by Bitcoiners. And that's what's driving the move so far. And we see it. We see hubs, you know, getting up in Latin America. We see here in Austin, Miami, a few other hubs happening. And those are just Bitcoiners looking for other Bitcoiners.
Yeah, I think this is the case, and I think there's probably a big market opportunity here in providing a kind of coherent solution for Bitcoiners. Currently, I think Austin is kind of the shelling point. It's the place where, if you want to go and be near a lot of Bitcoiners, you go to Austin, because Austin and to some extent Miami as well, because both are relatively freer than the rest of the world, and both have been. You know, the governors of Texas and Florida have both announced that they're done with this stupid bullshit. Anyone can do whatever they want. They're not imposing much. And there is a lot of Bitcoiners. There are a lot of Bitcoiners there. So people are moving there. But I think the case against those places is that they're one election away from becoming the next California. I mean, it's worth remembering DeSantis won Florida by 50,000 votes, and 50,000 votes are very easy to fake. So, you know, it's 50,000 votes faked or 50,000 correct votes go the other way a couple of years ago during the Florida governor elections, and Florida would have been California today, would have been New York, it would have been completely devastated. With this stuff, so this is the scary thing. Currently, I think Florida and Texas seem like they're good, but and this isn't just in the U.S. This is also everywhere. So you know, people who are thinking about going to any particular Eastern European destination or Latin American destination, that's also true there. It's not very difficult to get. And in particular, I think it was, you know, the president of Belarus said something along the lines of. IMF was telling him they will give him the next loan only if he imposes lockdowns and all of that stuff. Now, I don't know how true that is. I don't know how honest, how reliable Lukashenko is, but it's not exactly past them to put conditionality on of this sort. So
This is kind of the tricky part of it. And I think people who are looking about or thinking about citadels are probably, you know, thinking about citadels that are going to be a little bit, you know, it's not going to be about buying castles that or building castles that last 1,000 years. It's likely going to be homes that are easy to remove and cheap to build, because you never know when the next election comes along and you get a lunatic who wants to shut things down.
Yeah, I just want to believe that, like, I always tell them to vote harder, because, like, it doesn't really change things if you look at the big picture. Like, just go vote harder. Again, follow the incentives. I do believe that Florida and Texas benefited a lot from being non-crazy right now and for having no state income tax and all that stuff. So I believe they will keep those in place for quite some time. But again, if I have a house that is fully self-sustainable, I'm not relying on grid, like electricity grid or water grid. My kids are homeschooled. I'm healthy. I have my own food. That, like, no amount of election or no governor will actually change it. And, like, I can stay low or I can protect myself in those scenarios. Just need to optimize. Like, that's another thing we have to optimize for their bullshit, basically. Just making sure that those attack vectors, such as change in tax policies, change in vaccine mandates, like, won't really change anything in my life if I do this certain steps. So try to optimize for their bullshit too.
Yeah. Okay, Stefano has a question for you.
Yes. Hello, Katie. Thank you for the very interesting talk. And first of all, congratulations on your pregnancy. That's absolutely wonderful news for you and your family. So my question is the following. You mentioned, you talked about asylum and that some people are actually reaching out to you to ask for asylum from countries like Canada and Australia. Is this really happening? And is it actually possible to get asylum from those countries?
So I'm not helping with asylum. I'm not a asylum attorney or anything like that. But just this morning, I had a call with somebody from Australia who is currently interested in obtaining asylum in the United States because of what's going on in Australia. Wow. I think we will have to see precedents. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's making people do that is political asylum is the longest case that might take 4 to 7 years mm-hmm. to go through the procedure. So they're basically winning time instead of just going back to Australia and being being there in the safest prison, as one of my clients mentioned.
Okay, that's fascinating. Thank you. Well, I mean, it's kind of tragic, but it's interesting. Thank you.
Chris, you have a question?
Yeah, thank you very much for this talk. And I just wanted to ask you, of the tax havens you mentioned in the Caribbean, were there any ones you're noticing that Bitcoiners are gravitating towards or showing the most interest in? Thank you.
Yeah, you used to choose your tax haven based on the following criteria. Can you include your dependents? What the price is? What the timeline is? Is it 4 months or 6 months or 10 months? And what the actual tax regime is. Right now, you're also optimizing for which one does not require vaccine mandates. So we see how different islands react differently. And, like, I really liked St. Lucia lately because they didn't lock down in any kind of crazy way. They're fully open for travelers on a PCR test. They say they're overbooked on hotels and everything, and they're, like, thriving. They're liking it for sure. Their timeline is the fastest right now. So right now, a lot of Bitcoiners go in this direction. But then also depends where you're coming from, how strong is your initial passport is. Because if you want really strong jurisdiction, you would still go for St. Kitts, who also didn't require vaccine mandates. But yeah, those are the two that I'm seeing the most interest towards.
Thank you.
All right, Bernardo.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Katie. Thank you for this was amazing. So I'm just curious about if you're seeing any traction towards El Salvador. We see a lot of hype lately because of the shift towards the sort of Bitcoin standard there, but we're, at the same time, we saw a lot of strong enforcement of the lockdown and the whole COVID craziness has been strong there. So I'm curious just to hear from you if you've seen that. A lot of Bitcoiners looking to moving there or getting a Salvadorian citizenship.
Yeah, there are definitely a lot of interest that coming to me about El Salvador, which I currently don't work with. One of the reasons I don't work with them is, first of all, they don't have citizenship by investment program. They only have the residency program, which I believe is not as interesting in the current scenario. Because, yes, obtaining residency in a country is cool because it allows you to live there. But citizenship is much stronger because you can actually travel on this passport as a travel document in case your home country passport getting revoked, which is, I think that might be the next step for many. Will revoke your passport if you don't get vaccinated, could be possible. So second passport is a really great tool to have. I think they will change it soon and it will become much more interesting, especially for people like US citizens, because they do need the second passport in order to renounce US citizenship. We'll see. I mean, it's so new what's going on in El Salvador. I want to believe it's good because, you know, it's nice to believe that it will happen, but at the same time, I'm somewhat skeptical just because I'm skeptical of any government. No matter do they like Bitcoin or not, they're still politicians, and I tend not to believe politicians.
Yeah, I agree with you in general, but I have to say, I mean, so far they have exceeded my expectations. I mean, the announcement in June, I thought, oh, this is going to be a disaster. It's a government. I mean, I didn't think it was going to be a disaster, but I thought, you know, it's a government. They're going to mess it up like they mess everything up. But so far, it's gone far better than I expected. So at least I'll give them that benefit of the doubt. But I think one question I forgot to ask you earlier, and now Daniel reminds me, is what is the example of the kind of cost that is involved in getting one of these extra passports? And how much can you really save in terms of taxation? What is your experience of the average customer, basically?
So let's talk about the two countries that I mentioned. For St. Lucia, for single applicant, based on the donation route, it would be around $130,000. And that includes basically all the expenses. So $100,000 government donation. Then you spend around $10,000 for their due diligence and processing fees, plus $20,000 Plan B passport fee. So for single applicant, it's about $130 for St. Lucia and about $170 for St. Kitts. Now, if we're talking about family with, let's say, two kids, 6 and 8 years old, that would be a little different, but not by much. So St. Kitts would end up being $185,000 and St. Lucia would be around the same.
Okay. And what can you, what happens with their taxes there? Then what is the tax regime like there?
Zero capital gains tax, zero global income tax, zero gift inheritance tax. So now it's just the question is, how much can I save between my current tax regime and this tax regime? And basically, how long will it take for me to be in profit, right? So like you spend $180,000 and maybe the first year you save $200,000. Like that's no brainer.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Daniel, you want to go ahead and ask those questions? You have a couple of questions.
Yeah, sure. Hang on. Hey, Katie, how are you doing?
Pretty good. Good to see you.
Great to see you. Thanks for joining, and congrats on the laser eyes in the belly on that tweet that you put out there. That was we got another Bitcoiner coming. Brilliant.
Oh yeah.
Just talking about like St. Kitts or St. Lucia, for example, just to stick on those countries. What about like property laws? You know, if you buy a property, is it yours or can it be taken away from you? How are the laws like that over there?
So the way I would answer this question is like, you can never look forward and like promise that it will stay the same way, but again, follow the incentives. So those jurisdictions have been asset protection countries for so long. So it's not that Bitcoiners are the first clients of those citizenship by investment programs. It's been around for like 35 years for wealthy individuals from all over the world, hiding their, not hiding, but like protecting their properties by putting them under this certain jurisdiction. And like it worked out for them pretty well. Otherwise, those countries would not be any more of interest of wealthy individuals and they would lose all their revenue. So far, both banking been pretty reliable there and, you know, the property rights have been pretty good too. But again, you don't know. I can't promise for the future.
Ivar has got a question for you.
Hey. Thank you for the for this. It's been great. I just want to come with an observation on the sovereign individual that they did predict like biological warfare and that nation states would be trying to restrict travel. So it's more like observation, like it, could it be that we're just still a little bit early in this and that the internet will have a profound effect in freeing the individual?
And is it a question to me? Because I don't know the answer to that.
Sorry, it's more probably to Sabine, as he is like skeptical on the sovereign
digital. Yeah. You know, I think that's a good question. That's a good point. I think, you know, clearly the book does not say that it's all going to be plain sailing, obviously. It does say that the state's going to be reacting viciously. But I think the particular objection that I have is the idea that technology is going to be unabashedly in favor of the individual. I think this is probably the one point that I am struggling with, and it's the idea that, you know, the microchip obsoletes the nation state or the modern state. I think this is really the key issue, because you look at things like central bank digital currencies and the social credit scores, and you see how actually the microchip is massively empowering the state, because it's allowing it to control a lot more about what their citizens are able to do. But yeah, you're right. The book is very very good at foretelling what has been happening in the world.
Is it a playbook, Saif? Just throw that one out there. Is it a playbook hiding in plain sight?
What do you mean by playbook?
It's the playbook for a nation state to follow. Rees-Mogg, one of his son, is now a politician in the UK, in the sitting party.
Yeah, but
I'm just saying.
Interesting, and he's not much. He's not very influential in the party. He's not Team Boris, is he?
Yes,
he is.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
He struck me as being a little bit more of a libertarian, but I guess that was probably me just projecting what I wanted to hear from him. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Well, I would be a little surprised, but it's not impossible.
It's out of left field. But who knows, man? Who knows anything anymore? Anyway.
Yeah, indeed. Stefano?
Yes, thank you, Saif. One other quick question, Katie. I was checking your Plan B passport website, and I was surprised to see that Portugal is there, because I tend to lump Portugal with the other Western European countries. So what's the reason why it's there? What do they offer that other Western European countries don't?
So a lot of people who are optimizing for different things just want to get an European passport because it's pretty powerful for later on. So even though Portugal doesn't offer you a passport right away, they offer your residency program first, and then 5 years later, for somebody like Russian citizen who just want visa-free access to the United States and Canada and a lot of West European countries, that's a pretty good option. So that's one reason a lot of people going for Portugal. Also, their program is just really good. Like you just buy in the property from an actual free market of properties in the country, and you can rent it out right away, so it can become a cash flow in many cases. While in the Caribbean, you're choosing from properties that are approved by government, So again, they're approving the properties that either need your money in order to be completed, or they're skyrocketing in price right after approval. So it's not a free market. And the other reason is they do not tax Bitcoin. And that's also pretty big.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Aaron, you've gotten a question.
So Katie, my question is concerning a recent family situation that I had where my wife has left me and I'm left with 5 children and I'm looking for a secondary passport situation. Do you know if I need the permission of the other guardian to obtain a investment passport like in St. Lucia?
Yes. Yes, you would need a letter of consent from a biological mother for all 5 children if they're all under 18. So
okay, great. Have you also, I have a general question about just traveling back and forth with secondary passports. Is there any special instructions or anything we need to know about choosing which document to utilize when we do travel? Or are they really interchangeable in a sense that if I'm an American and I'd like to use that St. Lucia passport to leave America, where can I learn about how to use these passports in the most efficient or best way?
Yeah, it's a whole strategy, honestly, because you don't want to enter a country on one passport and exit it on another, because that will create not a favorable situation for you in terms of immigration kind of things, because they won't be able to count days you spend in the country and all that stuff. So you need to be careful about that. Also, depending on which country you're going into, because maybe on your US passport, you won't have visa-free access there, but on your St. Lucia passport, you will. So that would be another one. And what I like to say about having a second passport, that's it gives you choice. And when you have a choice, you can play accordingly, according to the situation, choose whichever one is better. And again, that's when you play the jurisdictional arbitrage and consider, like, you travel to the country where they hate Americans. Perhaps you should be St. Lucian there. And interestingly enough, they won't really notice the difference in many cases, because St. Lucia is not a huge country with which culture we're so familiar with. So that's just always for you to decide. Very, very custom tailored strategy that needs to be inbuilt there. Some Jason Bourne stuff.
Thank you, Katie. Thanks for all your hard work.
All right. Well, Katie, thank you so much. This has been massively informative. I think a lot of us are going to be benefiting from this in the new dystopia that we find ourselves. We wish you the best of luck with your business and with your pregnancy and with your family and with your continued hopping around the world and evading the leviathans of the world one at a time. And thanks again for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Really enjoyed it.
All right, have a good day.
You too.